This program was first broadcast on Otago Access Radio and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Tune into All Good Poems Wear Travelling Shoes with Ian Loughran. It's poetry on the radio, readings, chat with local and visiting poets, and news about events and book launches. From the beautiful to the intriguing and provocative, there's something for everyone. Tune in to ORFM every second Saturday at noon on 105.4 FM and online at www.oar.org.nz. All Good Poems Wear Travelling Shoes, brought to you by the University Bookshop.
Welcome to the show. I have two very special guests with me today. I have Sue Wooten. Hello, Sue.
Hi, Ian.
Yeah, hello, Sue. And James Dignan. Hello, James.
Hi, Ian.
So, just before we get into it, I just want to shout out to people that have contacted me from overseas who are listening to the show from Australia and the UK. Thank you, and keep listening. And if we do have any listeners in other countries, if they want to hit us up on our Facebook site and let us know, we like to keep those contacts going. Anyway, I will get in and I will introduce our poets. Sue Wooten. There's quite a lot to say about Sue Wooten.
Don't say it.
I will say some of it for our listeners that are maybe overseas who don't know Sue. Obviously, a lot of people in New Zealand will already know Sue's work. She has a collection of three short stories, published in an ebook, The Happiest Music on Earth, four collections of poetry, Hourglass, Magnetic South, By Birdlight, Out of Shape. In 2008, she held a Robert Burns Fellowship in Creative Writing at Otago University. And most recently, well, you know, I could go on for quite a while, but most recently she was winner of the 2015 Castleberg Trust International Poetry Prize for a poem she may read for us now, if we're lucky.
I'd be happy to read the poem.
Thank you, Sue.
The poem's called Luthier, or Luthier, and as that probably indicates, it was written for in response to someone who had made a guitar and was playing the guitar. That musician in Luthier, the real Luthier, who inspired the poem, was Graham Waldrop, who's a Christchurch-based guitarist in Luthier, who is internationally renowned as well as plays, you know, many gigs around New Zealand. And I was lucky enough to be in Central Otago in Otorihua, in the Maniototo, actually, for one of his gigs at a straw bale cottage built by a friend of mine, Gillian Sullivan,
nice.
Another writer, actually. Okay. So we were at Gillian's place, and Gillian had invited Graham to give a house concert, which he did, and that was lovely, absolutely lovely concert. But he was playing a guitar that he had made himself, and his comment about that guitar is what inspired this poem. You have to bear in mind that Graham hails from Christchurch, and of course the earthquake is a significant part of the Christchurch story. He said something about what it was made with, his six flitches of Sitka spruce. That is what inspired this poem.
Okay.
So here we go, I'll read it. It's called Luthier. Okay. He has the guitar in mind. In his quake-rocked studio, he leans over the quiet grain. Listen, rain falling on Vancouver Island. Six flitches of Sitka spruce with which to summon sound. The spruce conducted breeze and storm for centuries, never knew a day to pass in silence, recognized her guests by footfall and by wing rush, squirrel scurry, spiral of ants on the saproot, beaks and claws and paws, all that patter and flutter and slink. Summer-heated cones clicked open, slow-baked, while the high tips waltzed close to the sun. And in blind winter, the whole tree threshed, screaming Alaska at the gale, until the branches bowed to the weight of a white, creaking shush. This, for a thousand moons. A brief age then, of rumbling, of shouts and engines, and a bedrock shimmering that teased loose the grip of roots. And briefer still, the day, and very brief, the act. And when the act was done, the wood was mute. He splits each flitch and pauses. he hears the stuck scratch of needle-sharp leaves upon a long-gone sky. He has the guitar in mind and in hand. He leans over the polished grain. He loves the shape of her. He loves her song. Listen, rain falling on Vancouver Island, his fingers threading strings.
Oh, thank you. And when I first heard that at the award ceremony, it sort of, it reminded me about the crafting of other things. Did you feel like even the poem itself or poetry itself?
Yes, I do think it speaks to the creative urge, pulling things out of other things, of making things out of notion of, well, just in itself. I mean, the way that poem was made was a gift to me of a fragment of speech that Graham said, six flitches of spruce. It rolled off his tongue. I'd never, you know, I just went, whoa, I'll take him that.
It's a phrase, isn't it? It's a seed phrase, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I'm having that one. Yeah. I sort of looked around me, thought, oh, has anyone else got that? No, I've got it.
It's often the way to start a poem, just you hear this random phrase and it sort of buries itself in your mind and starts worrying.
Buries and it worries, that's right, until you must do something with it. But, and I think also that poem does talk about making an instrument. So obviously, I mean, we, as poets, as writers, we are making instrument of language. I feel when I speak it, I try to, that it is a form of vocalising that instrument. Yeah. So, yeah, it does speak to creativity, the whole process, It speaks to the process.
And it does have a melodic flow too, doesn't it?
So I hope
you
so.
Do, yeah, you do evoke the instrument playing as well. And I just, before we hear from James, I just wanted to just mention the Castlebeck Trust because I met some of the board members at the awards night and they're very, very nice people and doing great work. But I'm not aware of exactly what they do. So could you, you've worked with them more than me or you know, you're aware of them more than me?
Yeah, I've come into contact with the Castlebergers. they are a fabulous bunch of people. They formed the trust to purchase the cottage on the Broad Bay, out at Broad Bay on the Otago Peninsula that used to belong to an artist and writer, Anna and John Castleberg. They now run that cottage as a writer's residency, an artist residency, or creative residency, actually, just generally speaking. They're very open to creative projects in multiple genres, which is fantastic, fantastically generous opportunity. I was lucky enough to spend a week there just before Christmas, just before Easter. It was nice. It was so close to town, to Dunedin City. It's 20 minutes, if that, 15 minutes drive, and yet it was another world. And I didn't think that I would be writing anything, actually, because I was fairly tired, fairly sort of thought I would just be reading and gathering myself. But actually, there's something there. There's something in the place that a little generator.
Something in the walls.
This is a lodestone.
The Castlebergs tied in with so many other artists and literary characters around the Dunedin area as well. There quite likely is something from all the visits there.
And the cottage has got paintings and writings by many of the people who've been associated in it. So you can't help but be inspired.
I believe it's a beautiful place. I must visit and see for myself. Now, I want to introduce our next guest before we hear more from Sue in the show. But it's James Dignan, who I first came across via music, which is not surprising because he does have a good, strong musical background. He's been a member of the Dunedin music scene for some years now as a singer, songwriter and guitarist, with a lead singer and guitarist and songwriter for late 80s bands, the Caftans and the Movements. But you may also know him for his work with the ODT as a quiz compiler and an art reviewer. So we also have Sue with us, who's the poetry editor for the ODT. So he has a bit of an ODT connection. We will hear some of James's music in the show. I will play a track. But James, welcome.
Welcome to you.
As I say, I did become aware of you as a musician, but then later on as a poet, and I'm very impressed with your poetry. So can we hear one now, please?
You can. I'll actually read one which ties in with music.
as well.
Good stuff.
That's good.
This is one I know you liked from when I read it at Poetry Open like a couple of months ago. This is based on a photograph of the band Joy Division on Epping Walk Bridge in Manchester in 1979. Joy Division, most of you will very probably be aware, were a leading band in the Manchester music scene of the late 70s. Until the tragic suicide of their lead singer Ian Curtis, and the remnants of the band went on to form New Order. And they're seen as an extremely influential band. Songs like Atmosphere, She's Lost Control, they were a very important part of the late 70s, early 80s British music scene. So this poem is based on a photograph, which I found online, of Joy Division on Epping Walk Bridge in Manchester in 1979. The cold northern wind blows past a wintry bridge. Below, the cars rush south and away, seeking life or jobs or just escape from a monochrome town in the desolate north. The cotton forgotten, the nation's pumping industrial heart atrophied. The land of Corro and Beasley streets, of teenage pram pushers and OAP hobblers, empty crisp packets blown through the sullen dead trees, past the bricked-up windows and the no-vacancies signs, spite in the shite and crime in the grime, Thatcher uber alles and no relief from the grief. Yet on the bridge, four figures stand, jacketed against the sleet, their hands pumping beats across the empty skies to corrode the system. One of them alone can see beyond the lies to the otherness, his views of fires sparking out of control in the dark of his brain. Dreams bleak with the ice of isolation. He sees the slow doves beneath the water, the flapping sails against the soot-black cloud. In him silence has a sound, despair a solid voice. Surrender will come as his only escape, but not before his mark is laid that others who are stronger may follow.
Thank you. I do know the photograph, and say the poem speaks to me too, because I lived in that area for a while and was lucky enough to see Joy Division before Ian died. It was a very a time when they were just on the up, and they were a support band, but everyone had gone to see them and not the headline band. And then after they finished their set, half the audience went, and the main band, who were the Buzzcocks, ended up splitting up after that tour because they were so annoyed. They've since got back together. But
I think I'm right in saying Ian Curtis committed suicide just before they were due to make a major tour.
It was 2 days, I think, before they were due to fly out to the States for their first American tour. So I think we'll play a track of your music before we move on, if that's okay.
Thank you.
That was Mission Statement from James Dignan. And back with our poets, and we're going to flick over to Sue Wooten again now to hear another poem.
Thanks, Ian. To carry the musical theme on, as it happens, this is a poem that got started from a fragment of reading, because I was ploughing my way through Proust's In Search of Lost Time. I'm still ploughing my way through Proust's In Search of Lost Time. But this little sentence I loved, he says, our imagination, he compares our imagination, he says, like a barrel organ out of order that always plays some other tune than that shown on its card. And that's how this poem got started. It's called Barrel Organ Out of Order. The barrel organ's waltzing and the organ grinder's humming, and up and down the street the windows are flung open and canaries chirp and cages and ladies lean out smiling, princess this and princess that, made royal by the organ grinder's song, and patting spotted head scarfs into high-plumed velvet turbans and swinging hand-laced petticoats, not tatty cotton aprons. They lean upon the sills as if their breasts might spill from all constraint. And the kids scoot up with pennies for the organ grinder's supper, with grubby knees and urchin grins and shiny eyes, as polished as that far-off sprung-floored ballroom on which one day in silk and tails they'll twirl, for love, for love, for love. Like Mama in the window as the barrel organ sings it, gliding in her taffetas, her diamond eardrops twinkling, as the monkey spies a gentleman and clambers off the barrel, whips a crown from noble wallet, slips at monkey waistcoat pocket, and scales the organ grinder to perch haughty on his shoulder, as the children's laughter rings and the ladies fan their faces, as for mirth and flirt and happenstance they waltz. As the barrel card reads poverty, but rolls this dream, this 1, 2, 3, completely out of order. Praise be.
Well, thank you. It's lovely. I think the poems we're hearing today really evoke images, like very strongly.
I
saw an organ grinder when I was a small boy. And
it's never not easy to
forget. You don't say them much these days, but
no.
Yeah. Thank you. And we had another one from James.
Yep. Okay, this one was also inspired by a writer, though a completely different field of writing. The astronomer and cosmologist Carl Sagan, who wrote a number of wonderful books on science and also was host of a television series back in the late 70s called Cosmos, which has just been redone, a new version of it with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Okay.
Carl Sagan was involved in the Voyager 1 and 2 projects, and there's a famous plaque on the side of these space probes with information about Earth and a golden record disc which has all the sounds of Earth, and it was his idea to put that on, so if the probe ever encountered another civilization, it would know something about us, whether we were still here or not, basically. And one thing he did, as the Voyager probes were leaving the solar system, he asked NASA to turn one of them around so it could take a photograph looking back on all the planets, on the Earth, on the Sun, the Earth, and all the planets out as far as Neptune. And it's become an iconic image of this tiny little pale blue dot, it's called, or pale blue speck, rather, of the Earth in a shaft of sunlight. And that's what inspired this poem. It's called Faith to Carl and Voyager. This pale speck, alone on the velvet acreage of night, is the haven of our dreams. Its dim curve, reflecting a distant warmth and golden glow, is the sum of all our lives. How strange it would be to find others watching their sky from other shores, our familiar stars arranged in new patterns, others maybe with dreams not unlike our own. But how unbelievably sad and lonely it would be if we were all the life there was, our feeble hopeful greetings sailing forever into an unforgiving void. Faiths in their arrogance say that this vast universe is ours alone, but faith comes in many forms, and mine waits for a reply.
Well, thank you. I'd just like to, you know, both of you work with the arts in different, you know, different fields, and you come across obviously a lot of artists and poets. So, how do you feel that art and poetry, especially, are sitting at the moment in New Zealand or even locally?
James, you might going to go first on that, because you have really a lot to do with the art scene here as well as the writing scene.
That's a good question, actually. I've not really thought about it. Certainly the arts in general are thriving in Dunedin in particular, but in the country
as a whole.
Yeah.
And there is a certain amount of crossover between poetry and art. There was an exhibition I was part of beginning of this year, I think it was, Cheryl McCammon's work for the Poems in the Waiting Room series, in which a series of artists all interpreted poetry by Cheryl. And the art was displayed with the poems underneath. And there was a wonderful wide range of different styles and different types of subject matter involved in that. So I think there is a liaison between the two. And it's gone back a long way, of course, back to the days of Hautrey and Tuthare and people like that. So the two do sort of work alongside each other.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And in terms of the poetry scene here, it's thriving too. It's fantastically strong, I think, at the moment, energetic and vibrant. And what I think is amazing about, for instance, the circadian rhythm meetings, open mic nights and guest reader nights, is the range of voices. You get a full range of voices from the community. You get students, you get older people, you get, you know, just anyone. And it's a very supportive and nourishing environment. I think people feel they can stand up and read and your voice will be respected. So and if you're sitting in the audience, you certainly come away very enriched from that.
I will interject that if you are interested in going along to the Octagon Poetry Collective night, the next one after this show is on the 17th of June, which features guest poets Jocelyn Dunford and John Burney. The MC is Kay Mackenzie Cook, on the 17th of June at the Circadian Rhythm.
Actually, I think that John Burney has had to withdraw.
Oh, okay. Oh, thanks. Good to hear.
I think that the poet replaced, I hope I'm correct, I'm pretty certain I am, is Jenny Powell.
Okay. Jenny Powell's good poet. This show will go out on the 20th of May. Sorry, I should have told you. There's a Facebook page for the Octagon Poetry Collective, so we can keep you updated. As I say, great night, very supportive, a great mix of people.
Can I have a little add-in for something?
Yes, please, please do.
That's for the second Dunedin Secondary School Poetry Competition. The first one was held last year in conjunction with National Poetry Day. The second one this year, of what we hope will be a permanent fixture on the Dunedin calendar, is open now, taking submissions now. So it's open to any student from high schools in the Dunedin area. There's a website for that with the entry conditions on it, how to submit a poem. That website is rightnow.org.nz, WRITENOW, right now. So look that up.
Ask a question, actually. Sue, how do you think the City of Literature thing will affect the local poetry scene?
I think it's actually already had an impact on... how can you put it? It had an impact just on the a sense of pride, I think, in that we as writers here feel that, I don't know, it's a recognition of how strong the culture is here in writing. And I think, actually, to be honest with you, within what I feel is that within New Zealand as a whole, the national radar has been certainly not on Dunedin in recent years. It's been further north. So the recognition of the City of Literature, the success of the City of Literature bid, has been very rewarding for Dunedin writers. It makes you feel good about what you do.
And the great work for everyone involved.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Fantastic job.
There's only 11 City Literatures in the world, I think. And so we're one of them, so it's very good.
Yeah, it's fantastic. The thing is to it helps us generate ideas, and it's also quite demanding too. There's the other side of the coin is that there can be a fair bit of pressure on the writers to keep on producing work without necessarily any recompense. I mean, that's the side of the coin hasn't changed. We're still doing what we did before. But perhaps, so I think that all has to be, it'll shake down. I think there will be, good things that come of it.
That's great. We have time for a couple more poems before we finish. Have you got one ready, Sue?
Yeah, I might read one that is to do with I wrote it a few years ago for around Anzac Day. So since we've just had Anzac Day, okay. And kind of also following on from your Little Blue Speck poem, James, because sometimes we we do bad things to the Little Blue Speck. this is a poem that was inspired by the cenotaph here in Dunedin.
Okay.
It's called The Glorious Dead. The last post plays at dawn and years go by. Narcissi spring up in meadows over secret filled-in pits. Clean, prosperous suburbs creep across unhallowed ground. Bulldozers roll in, and flesh-fed earth plumps out the backbone of new roads. False-bottomed boat, machete, guillotine. Every village grieves its gibbet ghosts. Years go by. The last post plays at dawn. In an ordinary garden by the cabbage crawls the worm descended from the worm which ate your uncle's uncle's uncle some far savage battlefield ago. The last post dawns and years of play go by. Wreaths surround the monument. A stripping wind denudes the oaks. The stone-etched lion won't rise or roar. Haunch weak, it stays. We have our freedom not to look and do not see the drone obliterate a distant desert tribe. The last post plays.
That's powerful. Thank you. James, have you got something sneak in before the end?
Yeah, I promised myself I'd never try to write a love poem because they always sound tacky and cliche. Oh. And I succumbed.
Roses are red.
I succumbed a couple of months ago, James.
So
this is my first attempt at a love poem, which I wrote in March. Come, take my hand, and let us walk through avenues of marbled leaves, the soft calling of birds masking our footfalls in the night. We will rest on cushions of gentle moss, the myriad stars circling above surround and protect us. I will bathe you in flame glow and autumn frost. I will clothe you in smoke and gentle rain. And in the dawn's light, I will kiss your breath and wrap you in the cloak of my heart.
Thank you.
It's lovely.
That was a good love poem.
Yeah.
Very good love poem. And I would, we are coming towards the end of the show, so I would first like to thank my sponsor, University Bookshop, and my wonderful guests, Sue Wooten and James Dignan.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time. Until next time, I'm signing off. Goodbye.
This program was first broadcast on Otago Access Radio and made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.